Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Jessa is a unique Florida character, and she is the protagonist of the new novel, Mostly Dead Things, by Kristen Arnett. This is the story of a queer woman who has had to try and keep the family's taxidermy business operating, keeping it afloat. But Jessa has control issues, even though it seems everything in her life is going out of control. Now, we spoke with Kristen Arnett about why she chose to write about taxidermy, something that she's never tried, and how the members of one family all find their own unique way of dealing with loss.
I was interested in exploring, like, how many different kinds of ways people deal with loss, right? Like, we're looking at, like, Jessa, who decides to double down on, I'm going to maintain everything that I've been doing. I'm going to keep on keeping on. And then you look at, like, her brother, who completely avoids everything. Like, it's just completely avoidant. Like, if I don't have to deal with it, if I'm not here, then I don't have to deal with loss. And then her mother, who is, like, creating these kind of, like, you use the word manic, but these kind of, like, very over-the-top expressive ways of, like, of making art that is a way to handle it. And so, like, I was very interested in seeing, like, people deal with, like, loss and with grief in so many different kinds of ways. And this is within, like, a single family unit, and they're all so different.
Yes.
And that was very interesting to me.
Jessa, she is the foundation of a very odd family. But tell us about how you went about creating her.
I was interested in creating a character who's dealing with, obviously, the trajectory of grief and what that looks like over the context of the narrative. But really, I was trying to make a character who's extremely controlling in every kind of aspect of her life. I wanted to write a character who not only wants to control her own emotions and her own sense of self, but also the sense of self and the emotions and the actions of everyone around her. It is frustrating to think about what it looks like to try and to control everyone, because it's not humanly possible to do that. But at the same time, I also found that very funny. I'm a person that is interested in how humor functions, like the myriad kind of ways things can be funny for us. And I think it's, like, extremely funny to think about somebody being like that much of a control freak, that they feel like they have to control not only how they deal with grief or loss, but, like, want to control how the other people around them do that.
Is she controlling because it seems like so much of her life is out of control? I mean, you talk about her father's suicide, her mother's very manic nature in dealing with that suicide. Is that why she's controlling?
I think it exacerbates it, maybe, because I knew starting out with this book, I knew I wanted to take a look at a person who for their whole life has had coping mechanisms, not good ones, but ones that have worked. So, like, what does it look like if a person who has, like, control issues has had these workarounds to deal with things in their life because they don't like to deal with loss or emotions that feel foreign or uncomfortable to them? What happens when something occurs that makes it so those workarounds, those bad coping mechanisms no longer work anymore? So for Jessa, like, when her father commits suicide early on in the book, that's the catalyst that makes it so, hey, these mechanisms that have worked for her are no longer going to function. And so what's that going to look like for herself? And what's that going to look like for her relationships? And I think for people who have control issues, it kind of makes them even tighten down harder. Like, they think, if I grip tighter, if I, like, react more strongly to things like this, I'm going to be able to get back in control of something. I'm going to be able to get back on top of this. And that's often not how things like that work. So I think as a character, she already has these kind of tendencies, and the death of her father just completely exacerbates them to the point they're almost comically over-the-top kind of control issues.
Is Jessa or any of the characters, do they resemble real people in your life?
I think, like, parts of them do. I mean, I think we all know people who have control issues in our life. I also think we know people who, pun intended, she, like, kind of is the straight man, but it's like she doesn't get the joke going on around her all the time. Like, things are funny that are happening around her and she doesn't get it. I also think we all, like, I've been talking about this with some people, the character Bryn, everyone has somebody, some, like, initial love or romantic interest that kind of did a number on us, that also informs how we proceed into the future romantically with intimate partners. And so I think that they're based on, like, ideas of kinds of people. But not anyone specifically is, like, a real person.
So we find out that Jessa is running the family taxidermy business, and that her father taught her, and it was something that was passed on from his father. Why taxidermy?
Well, taxidermy was very interesting to me. I mean, as a writer, I'm very interested in the physicality of things, the tactile of things, and taxidermy is doing a lot of that stuff. I'm also like a third generation Central Floridian, and I write very extensively about Florida, but I grew up around a lot of taxidermy. I didn't make any taxidermy, but it was something that was like, there were like deer mounts up in my church. They're like in restaurants sometimes. There was some in my house, like all my friends' homes. So I grew up like with it just kind of being present in my life, but I'd never really considered the process and procedure of the actual production of making taxidermy. And so I am a librarian as well, and research is kind of my bread and butter.
But I got to tell you something, reading this, I mean, it sounded like you spent time in a workshop. Mm-hmm. The way you describe how to cut, skin, mount animals the right way. I mean, beyond research, I mean, you never, ever even tried it yourself?
I did not. I did spend a prolific amount of time doing lots of different kind of research, because any animal that's in this book, that's taxidermied, that's opened up, I looked specifically in like, what would that specific animal look like to open up and look at the insides, and like, what would it take to taxidermy it? So I spent a lot of time up front doing that research, watching videos, going on web forums and chat rooms. And I really immersed myself in it, especially when I was on these kind of web forums and chat rooms. It was like places where people who actively produce taxidermy, like go to kind of talk with, like shop talk with each other, like, hey, here's like what worked for me, here's what didn't work. I wanted to see the kind of language that they used with each other so that it would sound authentic in the book. And so it was very helpful to me to see that. But no, I've never done any taxidermy myself. I do own some, and I did take it apart because I wanted to see what the inside looked like post-production of taxidermy, but no, I've never done taxidermy myself.
Oh, okay, so you own some. What do you own?
I own a baby duckling that's like dressed as a queen that someone gave me. I have some insects too, which is very different kind of taxidermy. It's like a different kind of thing. I had a squirrel on a bicycle, but like a Barbie beach cruiser, that's the one I opened up. So I don't have it anymore. I also have like, I mean, I live in Florida. There are a ton of gator skulls, and like some that are like shellacked and some that are just the bone, like the interior.
Right.
So I have a lot of that stuff too.
I think this is the perfect time to have you go ahead and read a little excerpt from the book.
Sure.
So I'll step aside. You go ahead at your pace. Go ahead.
Sure. Absolutely. At the back of the shop, we kept a storage bin that housed leftover animal parts. It was the stuff my father called bits and pieces, things we kept around as supplementary material when there was a rush and we needed extra scraps. Just in case, he said when I asked why we'd ever need a single duck foot, webbed yellow, orange, and black. I'm not going to throw out something we could use. Thrift was something I'd incorporated into my own work process. Bills, a word spelled out in all capital letters blinking neon in my skull, kept me awake at night. If there was an opportunity to cut costs, I was willing to consider it. Parts disappeared and reappeared whenever an especially large workload presented itself. The cabinet held an odd jumble, severed deer hooves with the ankle still attached, rabbit feet with too many toes, mismatched alligator jaws. We had feathers from cardinals, finches, herons, crows, and jays, ruffled and slick, downy and spiked. There were horns of all colors and shapes, antlers, bone segments, fur swatches, disconnected tails. The bin had clear compartments, every drawer labeled with its contents in blue masking tape. Looking at it from far away, you could almost convince yourself you were looking at a real cabinet of wonders.
I'm speaking with Kristen Arnett. Her debut novel, Mostly Dead Things, is this month's Sundaw Book Club pick. The book centers around a female taxidermist in Central Florida. If you want to read along with us, join our book club. Look up Sundaw Book Club on Facebook. Ask to join. It's free. We'd love to have you, and always share with us what you think as you're reading the book. I wondered if, since the book has come out and being on tour, if you've run into any taxidermists and they said anything to you about the book.
So a worry for me, like, pre-publication was like, you know, are people who do taxidermy going to like read this and be like, no, this isn't what it's like at all. So, well, I've been on tour. I've had some people come up who like do their own kind of taxidermy and have been like, oh, wow. And asking me questions, and they're like, oh, this is exactly how I would have done this. And I'm like, oh, fantastic. But this past weekend I was in DC doing some stuff. I was at a bookshop doing a signing and just talking with some people who were there for a book club as well. And a couple different people who work for the Smithsonian in the taxidermy department were like so excited to talk with me about like, wow, this is exactly the kind of process a lot of the time that goes on in the Smithsonian taxidermy department. And I was like, yes, okay, great. It was so good to hear that like the kind of research I'd done had transferred over and was actually like, oh, successfully modeled after real taxidermies.
I was convinced. I thought that you had done it. So we come back to Jess's mother, and I'm following her narrative and I'm trying to understand where she's coming from. So she starts creating art out of some of these different body parts and creatures that are in the workshop. And yet she sexualizes them.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, is she dealing with her husband's suicide by letting out some frustration of the marriage? Or was it something abusive in the marriage? What was her reasoning for why she was, you know, again, creating artwork out of some of the taxidermy in a sexualized way?
I was very interested in making this character a woman who's older and is in a different place in her life. I wanted to see what it looked like to somebody who's been only for their whole life kind of relegated to the role of domestic helpmate, like wife and mother, who has like, you know, kind of longed or had this kind of repressed idea of wanting to create and make work, but has kind of been repressed not only by her husband, but by her family and her circumstances. What does that look like if the way that she processes grief is, I'm going to take some of the stuff that like made me feel repressed and like use it to like make myself feel a little freer and kind of deal with loss. So it was very important to me, especially in this relationship, because between the two of them, there's this dynamic. Parents a lot of the time have an idea about who their children are and how they should be or what they should become. But I think children also have this very specific idea about who their parents are and what they're allowed to be. For Jessa, it's like very disorienting to see her mother take apart these taxidermy animals that she and her father have put together. But it's also extremely disorienting to think about her mother as like a woman outside of her role as mom, like a sexual kind of being.
Was her mom making the art for herself, for other people, not for her kids, right?
Right. It starts off as this way for her to just be able to like express herself. These are the pieces and the things that she has access to. So she's like, she has constant access to taxidermy, right? In her household, at the shop, through like, you know, their business. And it's a thing that's, you know, kind of defined her whole life. And the trajectory of it is this taxidermy shop. So I loved the idea of her taking that and utilizing it just as like making things for herself. And then when people outside of her family are expressing an interest in it and seeing it as something, and she's always been somebody who's like artistically inclined, she's like, oh, you know, this is an opportunity for me to make this something bigger just for myself, and I can share it and it can be mine, but it's like this broader kind of thing. So I wanted to explore too, like, because I also think many people who create taxidermy consider it to be an art. It's a thing that like when people make it, they consider it to be a kind of art. But then there's also this idea about like, what is art? Like, what does art get to be? Like, yeah. Some art is like high art, and like, what's low art? Like, what's considered classier art and what's considered tacky? So I love the idea of like looking at how like in this household, they consider taxidermy to be high art, and the idea of taking it apart and making it in this way and something that would even be in a gallery, like just as like, oh, this is low art, it's tacky. But like, you know, like I wanted to take a look at that too, because I think Florida is a place that people consider to be this tacky kind of place.
Yeah. And Ari, you bring in Florida, and mm-hmm. and I mean, you've written this book very rooted in the state. Tell us a little bit about life in Central Florida.
Yeah, it was really important for me in the process of writing this book to write about the Florida that I have experienced. And I wanted it to be very Central Florida. And I was like, what is a way that I'm going to hopefully be able to get across like how Florida exists for me? The way that I went about it was I really tried to make it a sense experience. So anytime I'm writing about Florida, I want it to feel so embedded in the text that you could not take it out without like making the story different. I wanted it to feel as important as a character, as significant as a narrative arc. I wanted to look at what things smell like outside, like how the air feels pressed against you, like almost like hands. I wanted to, what do you hear when you're outside at night? Like, what do you hear when you're outside during the day? Like those sense experiences, which feel very Florida to me, because Florida feels like a presence, like a very live, creeping thing that's constantly there and around you. In order to like make this book feel like Central Florida, I was like, I want people reading it to like feel and sense and see and hear and smell like everything I would smell when I'm outside.
You hit that with the cicadas. You hit that with, I thought, beautifully with the lakes. This book is written from the perspective of a 30-year-old queer woman.
Yes.
And I don't know of too many female taxidermists, but I wonder, did you start by writing your character as a woman, the protagonist as a woman first, or as a taxidermist first?
I mean, it just was all connected to me. I also write, I really like to write stories that feature queer female narrators. So that's very important to me. I like to write about Florida. So this book, actually, the genesis of it started off as a short story. Before writing this particular novel, I considered myself to be like a short fiction and essay writer, not because I didn't want to write novels. I just never had like an inclination, like, or an idea that felt broad enough to be one. And so I was looking at a lot of like very bad taxidermy at the time, like really funny bad taxidermy online, just to make myself laugh. So I was kind of obsessed with it. And I started writing this short story about a brother and sister who are taxidermying a beloved pet goat for like a very close family friend, and they screw it up really bad. Like, they really mess it up. And this was a funny story to me, and I was also very interested in like what family dynamics look like when you're like in a situation where you're like stressed out, and like what other things pop to the surface, and then also like the humor of this kind of like very messed up kind of goat. And when I came to the end of it, it was the first time I'd written a short story where I was like, oh, I'm not done with this. Like, I'm not done with the people. I'm thinking about them constantly. I'm thinking about what their lives look like outside of this like small world I've created here. And so I knew that this story was about like a queer woman, yes, but I knew that at the heart of the story, it was also like a family business story. And it was very much a taxidermy story, because taxidermy is this conduit that carries a lot of things with it, right? It's a book that's about grief and loss, but it's also very much about like nostalgia. Because it's told in like flashbacks every other chapter, where it's like, you know, here's pieces of the past and memory. And memory is like, taxidermy is memory. Taxidermy felt very right for this person who is like living in memory a lot of the time.
That was author Kristen Arnett. Her debut novel is Mostly Dead Things. It's our August title for the Sundial Book Club. You can find us on Facebook. We'd love to have you.